I suppose that time is the most remarkable dimension within which we live throughout our daily experiences in this world. Time vanishes into eternity, and beyond the life we live now, there will only be occasional embodiments within time dimensions. But these can become very important and necessary to the part of the universal plan to which we belong. The human being has responsibility. Time measures opportunity. All opportunities that come to us in this life come within time patterns. But every opportunity has its own responsibility. The complete picture of an embodiment is an opportunity with responsibility. We are here for a purpose. We are not born simply to wander around in a chaos for a few years and disappear. There is a reason we are here. Most persons are not aware of this reason, and are therefore constantly in conflict with the plan to which they belong, and of which they are a part. Therefore, it is proper and important for us to recognize that this life is an opportunity with a price on it. We are here to grow. Now, to most persons, growth sounds rather unpleasant. We are inclined to think of growth as a problem of burdens, of duties, and of frustrations. To many persons, this entire mortal life is a frustration. They see no reason for their own existence, and no justice in what happens to them. These folks make life very hard for themselves and contribute to the misfortunes of others. It is wiser to realize that every time we come into this world, we come in to learn. We come to grow and to understand. And most of all, to unfold the internal potentials of our own natures. We have no real idea of what is locked inside of ourselves. We know that occasionally a genius arises and is remembered by others as a person of superb talents or abilities. But if you look at the whole world with 4.5 billion people, you finally come to the realization that the human potential is limitless. We not only have a special power within ourselves, but we share the power of all other living things. Therefore, there is no limit to the unfoldment of ourselves if we wish to make a project of growing. More likely, we make a project of complaining. And born into this world under the present conditions, there seems to be a just reason for complaint. The powers administering our material society are not aware either of their own destiny or the purpose for anything else. They live within a very narrow concept of material existence. The world as it is today measures people in terms of time allotments at $5 an hour, or $50 an hour, or $1,000 an hour. We work according to time patterns. When we can no longer fulfill those labors, we retire. And then for a time, enjoy or suffer from Social Security. Actually, the individual sort of drifts through this world. He works as much as he has to. He creates debts which he has to pay. He raises a family which he has to educate. And he is bound to a pattern of specialized abilities which he will remain with as long as he lives. He will work so many hours every day. He will complain largely of the fact that his abilities are not recognized, that he is not appreciated, and very often in the family circle, that he is not understood. All of these situations constitute the pressures of living. To escape from these pressures, he develops certain side aptitudes. Probably the most important one at the present time is the ability to sit for hours in front of a television set. Anyone who can do this really has a tremendous amount of something, but it is not intelligence. Actually, we have escapes. We escape from the problems of life by viewing imitation replicas of them on the entertainment level. We follow the sports. We try to keep up with the news, but are rather baffled. And at the end of the day, we fall into bed and wait for time to pass so that we can start another day just the same. Now, if this was the real reason for life, there would be abundant reason to suspect that the materialist is right. There is no purpose in anything. But actually, the materialist is unable to prove his point because he is talking about something that is alive. He is talking about a being that has within itself a vast diversity of abilities, of attitudes, a being capable of education, capable of achievement in many fields, perhaps a potential musician or artist. We do not know what is in this being, but we know that it has come here, that it is partly developed, that it has some abilities and many debilities, that it seems to be going nowhere, but it is moving forever along the road of time. Time is the measure of its duration in this dimension of existence. Some people are suspecting that there is a real purpose for life, and that by one cause or another, this purpose is being frustrated every day. Also, it becomes obvious that many persons who might have had a valid purpose have been frustrated by circumstances and forced to join the others in a comparatively meaningless existence. Realizing these things, it seems that those who really wish to prove that life is significant must take hold of their own abilities, take hold of their own natures, and try to release or develop talents and capacities and dimensions of consciousness which will enrich their lives. Problems come for apparently one primary reason. They must be solved. And the solving a problem is one way in which the internal of the human being is released into manifestation. If there were no problems, we would probably sit back in a condition of perpetual inertia. We are forced to meet circumstances. We are forced to devise ways of achieving a certain measure of comfort or security. We are constantly challenged to grow, and the rewards of life are largely reserved for those who have grown in one way or another, sometimes only economic growth or skills, but they have their rewards, and a well-lived life has a large reward if we can achieve this level of insight. Let us assume for a moment that the human being really has four levels of achievement open to him. He is not just one creature. He is a compound. He has within himself a number of unidentified but identifiable elements or potentials. The human being is, first of all, in our understanding, a physical creature. He has a body. Now, the body itself is a mystery that has never been solved. We work with it continuously. We study it constantly, but we still do not understand it. But we are gradually coming to realize something that's important. And that is that this body, this physical body, has laws and rules of its own. And if we break the rules of the physical necessities of life, we are chastised appropriately. The body has laws, it has demands and requirements. And it also has a certain tendency to regard itself as the younger child of something else. The body is a small child in a family of which the mind and the heart are the parents. Each body looks to its own leaders for safety, for health, and for the maintenance of the various functions and faculties and powers which manifest through it. Therefore, our first consideration, therefore, is the responsibility of the body, a responsibility that is given to us when we are born. This responsibility tells us one very simple truth. Take good care of the body and it will care for you. Abuse it and you will lose it. Now, many people do not think through cause and effect that far. The result is we have great numbers of persons every day who are committing an involuntary suicide. They are constantly, knowingly and intentionally violating the laws of the body. Among these, of course, are the alcoholics, the narcotics addicts, and those who do variously dissipate away the health with which they have been naturally endowed. So the individual with a body for which he is responsible has to learn to discipline his relationships with that body. He can view it as a child growing up under his care. Most children require a certain amount of discipline, and it is necessary for him to discipline the body. Normally, the body would probably rather well discipline itself, but placed in a false environment and surrounded by temptations with which it is not familiar, the body gets into difficulties. So we have to develop nutritional factors. We have to constitute our bodies according to rules of health. We have to, therefore, put a certain control over the fulfillment of bodily appetites. We have to take care of the rugged side of its physical efficiency. We have to nourish it adequately. We have to protect it in all ways that we can from emergencies, accidents, and disasters. One of the problems that we have with the body, of course, today is nutrition. The nutritional factor with the body, of course, is almost entirely chemical. Nutrition has to do with getting the proper food to the body. This in itself is a rather complicated procedure because opinions on the subject of nutrition are numerous and diversified. Probably in the long run, most persons have to work it out by trial and error until they find what is good for them. But one thing is obvious, namely, that there are junk foods. And these junk foods are, for the most part, the kinds we like the best. We've had long experience in enjoying the pleasures of the dinner table. And we do not like to be frustrated into some kind of a diet that tastes as though we were living on new mown hay most of the time. This requires control. But obviously, junk food is a problem with the body. And we have to gradually wake up to the importance of keeping it nourished properly. This is one of the uses that we have to make of our time allotments. If we wish to be as healthy as possible through the years of life, we must discipline ourselves in the controlling of physical appetites. Now, the next level above this, which we consider constantly, is the emotional life of the individual. The emotional life is the life of art, music, affection, friendship, and the more intimate and kindly relationships of life. The emotional life is fulfilled through the expression of various high moral and emotional qualities. It is expressed through love. It is expressed through service and compassion. But the emotional nature must be trained just as surely as the physical. Those false stimulations to emotion, which create only tension and stress, are like the junk foods in relation to the physical body. The emotions must be nourished upon a proper type of nutrition. The individual's emotions should be given adequate expression under discipline. These emotions should be centered upon creativity, understanding, sympathy, compassion, and service. Every individual should have some emotional expression of the beautiful. Every once in a while, we find someone who succeeds in living the entire lifespan with practically no emotional reactions. They have very few friends, and they lose the ones they have. They live alone, even if they are in the houses with others. They have no reaction to the simple joys or beauties or insights of life. They have very little fun, for humor and joy are emotional factors. And the individual who considers that the good life is the life that is forlorn, miserable, introverted, and separated from society is making a serious mistake. The actual suppression of man's appreciation for beauty is desperately detrimental. The individual who has not a warmth within himself, a natural kindliness, who does not realize the importance of curbing the unkind word because it hurts, the individual with proper normal emotions does not want to hurt any living thing. There is sympathy, there is compassion, there is self-forgetfulness, and there is freedom from this tremendous egocentricity in which the individual thinks only of himself. So the emotions call upon our attention and demand recognition. Now, to use these emotions in daily life takes very little more time than denying them expression. The simple emotions of human relationships are proper and appropriate to the need of the individual. But where too much criticism comes in, there is too much personal ambition, where there is envy or jealousy, or where the individual is simply unable to forgive wrongs or get over slights, difficulties, where this arises, the emotional nature is in trouble. This trouble can extend all the way along the road of life. It can begin in early childhood and continue till we drop into the grave. The appearance, therefore, of these tendencies should be recognized as one of the things we are here to overcome, transmute, and change. If we want to know why we are here, the first thing we may learn is to be able to control properly the very body we inhabit. The second thing we are here to do is to control and direct and rationalize the emotional life to make it beautiful. It costs no more to be kindly than it costs to be critical. In fact, far less. Kindliness has many rewards. Criticism has numerous penalties. So we have to go to work and realize that one of the things we're here to do is to clarify, purify, and redirect our emotional resources so that in every instance the emotion is handled in a constructive and helpful manner. Now, a danger to that, of course, is modern entertainment. Modern entertainment seems to be based upon whipping the emotional life. It causes us to develop all kinds of fears and anxieties. The individual reading the newspaper can have a complete breakdown over the difficulties and disasters of society. He also develops hates for people he knows nothing about, or accepts joyously someone who is a born scoundrel. He does not know the difference. But one thing is certain, he is punishing himself whenever he caters to the tendency to morbidity which is developing in so many people today. If he turns on the television, he should turn on something that is constructive, and if there's nothing constructive, turn it off and read a good book. The problem of trying to entertain your way along the path of life so that thousands of hours of opportunity are wasted in front of a box, this is not the fulfillment of the life for which we were created, nor is it the proper use of the time allotment which we have. So the emotions search for the beautiful. They try to create artistry in every field of life, in clothing, in furnishing of a home, in selection of ornamentations, in the building of public structures. Everywhere, beauty is an important dimension and a tremendously powerful, if intangible, ingredient in the compound. So everywhere we can and in every way we can, we should live beautifully. Simply, the most beautiful of all things are simple. But with dignity, with internal gentility of life, so that our entire relationship has a certain politeness, as Emerson would say, a condition in which we do everything graciously and try in every way possible to avoid the brusque or the critical or that which is asymmetrical. If we could make a diagram of our emotional lives, in some cases those diagrams would be remarkable in every sense of the word. They would be every shape you can think of, every color you can imagine, and with every disproportion that can possibly be combined. But gradually these things can be straightened out until the unfoldment of the natural love of the beautiful becomes a major part of our living in this world. We are here to unfold not only the skills of life, but the gentleness of life. We are here to gain insights and appreciations into things that are not commercial or are not limited within the commercial pattern of our daily experience. Now, the mental life also becomes now a point of important focus. It is very necessary to discipline our own thinking, because in many instances our thoughts are little more than a continuing pageantry of discomforts and discords of one kind or another. Thinking, the mind, is here in order that we may experience and gain insights into the whole study and life of mankind. It is the mind that gives us the memory of our own lives and the memory of the world's life. It is the mind that supports science. It supports all the different discoveries that are made. It is essential to the advancement of progress in every field of activity. It is also something you have to live with yourself every day. Now, the mind can get into bad habits. It can take on a diet of junk foods also, in which the thinking produces nothing. And every waste of mental energy is a loss to the person. It is doing something to make his stay here less good for him, less desirable for those around him. Looking over the world today, the tendency to be critical, disillusioned, or even frightened to death is strong. But actually, it is the power and right of the mind to discover the validity of existence as it is. We may not like it. We may know there's something wrong with it, but we must know that it is, that it exists, and it will continue to exist as it is until something changes it. And the thing that has to change it is ourselves. There is nothing wrong with the world that the human being cannot change if he so wills. But up to the present time, the will to change for the better has been restricted to a small group of persons. It may be for some time restricted, but if it is, it's still the right of every person who has a life to live to gradually correct mistakes, even if they are socially not considered wrong. If he is aware of a better way of life than those around him, it becomes his duty to live it. Thus, the mind becomes in many ways the ruler of the material world in which we live. It administers all the rules, it creates all the laws, it signs all the treaties and documents. It also shows us the long story of our own growth through time, revealed clearly the mistakes we have made, and would inspire us not to make them again. But a mind that, having seen all the mistakes of the past, continues to make them, personally, in his own life, is not learning from the life that has been given to him. He is not improving. He is not using his time allotment. He is wasting time, failing to change his own attitudes, and drifting further and further into the morass with which we are afflicted today. So we have these levels, and all of these levels have to be worked out within the time dimension. We have a certain number of years to work as far and as continuously as we can in the direction we want to go. Now, there is another dimension which becomes also very vital to us. Out of the confusion of the body, and we wonder why we should inhibit it, the emotions, we wonder why we should try to change them, the thoughts, we are perfectly certain are correct and need no help, but we are in trouble all the time. But above these is another dimension, which is experienced abstractly, but is still very important. It is that dimension within ourselves that comes the nearest to timelessness, and that is man's spiritual nature. Behind the mind, there is something else, and even today, materialists are beginning to suspect it very clearly. There is within and behind the individual a pattern of incentives. The individual will not do better until he believes that better can be done. And he will not probably put much energy behind doing anything well unless he realizes that there is a reason for doing it well, and that there is a power in nature that judges all things and rewards action according to its own merits. So gradually, the person seeking better orientation and better use of his privileges and opportunities becomes aware of an overpower, an over-self in the universe, an over-self in his own compound. This overpower is a spiritual directive. He is reminded in one way or another that the power of deity created him. The power of deity fashioned the universe in which he exists. The power of deity ordained the purpose for human existence. And that purpose was to fulfill the will of deity and become, in a sense, like God, knowing good and evil. So the spiritual overtone becomes the basis of consolation. It gives reason and purpose. It gives courage in times of discouragement. It gives a definite consecration to principles and to the divine plan of things. The nature of that plan, the purpose of it, and the administration of it, these have descended to us in the sacred books of the world. Every nation has had a scripture, either in the form of a book or an oral tradition, in which the will of the creating power is explored as far as the creature can trace it. He cannot trace it all the way. But he becomes gradually aware that there is a reality behind life. He begins to sense why it is important for him to try to be a greater person. He begins to realize that his destiny involves the development of a divine power within himself, or the release of God through his own nature. He becomes, in a sense, a cathedral builder, for he is constantly building a house for an invisible power which rules all things. The human being is here to come to the direct experience of the divine purpose. He is here to find the one consolation that can carry on through all eternity, and that's the consolation of the power of God to perfect him and all other creatures. So faith becomes a very important soul power and becomes more or less an ornament to the entire compound of man's nature. And it is, in a sense, the duty of faith to discover the reason for the mind, the emotions, and the body. It is faith that can direct them all. It is faith that can redeem the individual from the curiosities and misconceptions which have burdened him for so long. So time has to do with all these things. Time is the opportunity, the span for the ripening of reality in the individual. It is that part of his own place in space in which he is here to do the job he came to do. Now, very few people know what that job is, and they may never find out in this life. The only way they can approach it, as most thoughtful persons have approached these things, they can say, I do not know what the job is. But if I do not fail in any of my ordinary labors, I probably have done the job. Because whatever it is within the scope of normalcy. It requires no strangeness, no peculiar self-deceit, or no suffering for the sake of doing the job. It is when we do the wrong thing that we get into trouble. Now, time is interesting in another way. Time is a kind of orienting factor. Times are constantly changing. The great unrolling pageantry of time from the beginning of somewhere in space to the end somewhere in God. This tremendous pageantry is not known to us exactly. It is partly evident through the great mysteries of the cosmos. It is partly revealed to us through the various arts and sciences, particularly mathematics. It is also to a degree made known to us in our own small pattern of life. But for the most part, we gain a moral insight from history. Now, history is a wonderful way of showing to us the actual purpose behind life. The average person cannot fully justify his own ideals. But if he is fairly well equipped historically, he can see why he should do the right thing. He can realize the mistakes and what has caused them and what has come from them. From history, he can find out what is wrong with his political world, with his social world. He can discover the causes of war. He can realize the causes and tragedies of poverty. He can understand the misuse of power and authority. And also he can understand a little more clearly those constant groups of people who seemingly learn nothing and pass out of this life no better than when they came in. These kinds he can be careful not to imitate. There's no reason why anyone should come to the end of life, his lifespan, without some sense of achievement. I know many people, I've been in a good many rooms when death came, most of whom regret something. They wish they'd been more kind. They wish they had a few more years so they could live them more wisely. They wish they had searched to develop greater happiness or greater insights and had not been buried in professions or trades or in economic patterns that were unbreakable. Very few people, as you know, pass on fully convinced that they have achieved as far as they could what they were here for. But those who do pass along with a greater sense of peace and a greater sense of integrity do look back upon the kindliness that they have shown. The sacrifices that they have made for others are certainly more than worthwhile. They keep to themselves everything they gave. They lose from themselves everything they kept. This type of feeling comes near the end. It comes when the individual in a flash more or less relives his own life. And this life is simply a span of existence in time. He has been in time before. He will be in time again. But now he is slipping out of time. And the problem is to estimate the value of the life that he lived here. Now, when we come to trying to work out some kind of a plan for all this, we come against a certain number of inevitable obstacles. The individual feels himself to be pretty well captured in a pattern which he can do very little about. He finds that he must earn time. He must work so many hours to have so many hours for himself. If he works faithfully for 8 hours, he may have a few hours every day to do as he pleases. Sometimes what he pleases is comparatively trivial. Sometimes it's important. But outside of the working hours and the hours necessary for sleep and rest, there are hours that are at the disposal of the person. He has paid well for those hours. He has gone through maybe 16 years of schooling in order to get the job which pays him a living wage and gives him a few hours every day to do what he pleases with. Now, this allotment has been expensive, more expensive than we realize. It has taken the best of our energies and will do so through our working years. But in all instances, what are we trying to do? We are giving of ourselves and from ourselves in order to gain a little time. We want time to do things that we want to do. And employment is a thing we have to have. The leisure represents a privilege to select some kind of specialized activity. Due to the constant progress of various industrial, economical, mechanical statutes and structures, we are given more time than we used to get. In the old days, when man worked from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m, time was a great, more precious thing if you got any of it. Today we have many vacations and holidays, and we have comparatively short working hours, and there's a very bad life now that does not have 2 or 3 hours a day to do as it pleases. We can do almost anything we want to do with this time that we have so carefully purchased. We might say that on the basis of comparison, if our working hours bring an income of $10 an hour, to gain those 3 or 4 hours of special privileges is costing us from $40 to $60 a day. And for that, we have bought something. We have bought the right to do what we please for a time. For a limited period, we can be ourselves. Now, what do we do with this very valuable and expensive product for which we are sacrificing life and limb and which we have to use within the line boundaries of the present embodiment. What are we going to do with this precious freedom that we have bought by hours, months, years of monotony? Well, this is a question. What are we going to do with it? And people find the most ingenious and often nonsensical ways of spending it. They can do nothing. This is considered to be the supreme achievement. I know many people who believe firmly that if they do absolutely nothing and are waited on by others, then they are supremely happy. They do not realize that it is the person who waits on them that gets the soul growth, not themselves. Others feel that one thing they do not want to do with this time is face any responsibility. Everything must be easy. Others find that this time is very happily spent in a beauty parlor, along with further funds. Also, we find people who have all kinds of hobbies, all kinds of interests. Some find travel what interests them. Others find the building of a little machine shop in the back is a great happiness. Some want to spend the time on the telephone. This is especially true of adolescents, who practically live on them. But what do we really do with time? Here we have something which has within it the potential of the infinite unfoldment of ourselves. The leisure time is the time when we can be ourselves. We can do whatever we feel is right and best. We can escape from the burdens and deprivations of employment. And for a few hours every day, we can really be the person we want to be. That is, of course, if there's a person we want to be. Perhaps we do not feel this need at all, so we come home, flop down in front of the television, and wait for the next ball game. This is what we do. But what does this mean in the life of the person? If this was the only life, and we're going to oblivion when it ends, it wouldn't make any difference where we spend our leisure time. It wouldn't make any difference how little discipline we assert. The disciplined and the undisciplined will lie down together in eternal forgetfulness.